Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and it is fantastic to be with you once again. And it's awesome to be able to share another wonderful story around triathlon and Ironman with you on this edition. We head to California to catch up with Kelly O'Mara to find out how she got into the sport and sort of her journey from racing as an age grouper to turning pro. And it's a pretty cool journey in itself as well. So that's all coming up on today's episode. Before we get into that, a huge thank you to our sponsor of this edition of the Kona Edge. And it is Jack Rabbit, giving you a chance to win a pair of Hoka One One running shoes. All you need to do is head over to jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge or simply text the word jackrabbit to 44222 and I'll send you all those details. That's Jack Rabbit, one word, JACKRABBIT. To 44222 and we'll get you in the draw to win those running shoes. Before we head over to catch up with Kelly, let's find out who's in our coach's corner today. Today's Coach's Corner brought to you by Superfly Coaching. They've helped dozens of athletes reach Ironman Kona, the 70.3 World Championships, and even the Olympic Games. Their coaches, along with Joe Friel, have written several books on training methodologies. Their experienced coaches are uniquely qualified to recognize your skills while addressing your weaknesses. Their coaches have already helped athletes just like you reach their goals, so let them help you. Whether you're attempting to release pounds or shave off a few seconds, they're with you every step of the way. Are you interested in upping your game from acceptable to exceptional? By partnering with your passion and their experienced coaches, you can reach your full potential. Their coaching plans are like their clients, no two are alike. Once you've chosen your service level that works best for you, your coach will begin to develop your customized plan. Don't let stomach issues ruin your race. From coaching to nutritional advice, they cover it all. To discover more about Superfly Coaching, head over to theKonaEdge.com/coaching. And don't forget, if you're a coach or have a coaching business and would like to get a plug on the podcast, head over to theKonaEdge.com/coaching. We head to California now here on the Kona Edge, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Kelly O'Mara onto the podcast. Kelly, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Kelly, it's brilliant to have you on. California, great place to live and train?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a, I think I'm, it's not Boulder, but there's a lot of very good professionals that live right around here, so.
Are you born and bred Californian or?
No. I'm from Chicago. Well, I was born in Kentucky, grew up in Chicago, so.
And Chicago's, particularly winter's not ideal for triathlon, is it?
No, I mean, they have the biggest Olympic distance triathlon in the world. It's like 8,000 people. It's really cool. But yeah, I think everybody gets a little burned out during the winter.
And it's also known as the Windy City too, if I'm correct.
Yes. It's not that windy, but yeah, it's cold. It's cold wind. So.
Absolutely. All right, Kelly, as far as your triathlon, sort of your interest in the sport, it goes back to your early days. I mean, I think you were introduced in college, first time around, where you got involved in the sport and took it pretty seriously.
Yeah, collegiate. I don't know how collegiate triathlon works in South Africa, but collegiate triathlon here was kind of more of a club thing. You know, the party was as big as the race, at least when I was doing it. And in recent years, it's actually gotten very serious. They're trying to make it an NCAA sport. You know, there's actually getting scholarships. Like, it's gotten very competitive. But when I was doing it, it was more like everybody's welcome, which was great for me because I didn't know how to ride a bike. So it was very like, come, we'll teach you. And so I did it in college for a couple of years at that club level, which was, I think, actually has been a really big benefit for triathlon, like introducing people to sport, teaching them everything, like kind of getting them into it. And it's very fun and like low key. And then I actually kind of took a break for a little while and then kind of came back a few years ago. So.
I tend to agree with you with regards to sort of easing into the sport, because it can be quite overwhelming for a newbie coming into the sport where everything's, it's just gear, gadgets, Lycra, and triathletes are generally full on. I mean, they're A-type personalities. Someone coming into the sport, I mean, you look like a deer in the headlights at the best of times. And sometimes getting involved in a sport, as you say, low key, almost a drinking club with a triathlon problem.
Right. I mean, they're very fast. Everybody went all out all the time, but it definitely not as much worried about the gear, not as much obsessed about Kona points and qualifying, like all that kind of thing was not on their minds at all. So it was interesting.
As far as sporting backgrounds, I know you were a swimmer as well, played quite a bit of soccer growing up. The transition into triathlon, how did that come about?
I mean, when I got to college, I kind of thought about running, you know, because that was what I ran and I swam in high school. Kind of considered going out for the team. It's like another level though. You know, NCAA sports are all consuming, like your whole life. So then I kind of played some different club sports and triathlon just sounded like fun. It's kind of like, oh, you don't have to do one thing. You can do lots of different things, which was very appealing to me. But I didn't know how to ride a bike. So I took some of that.
You mentioned you took a bit of a break, and I was reading somewhere that was it burnout? Was it you just had enough of the sport and wanted to take a bit of a break? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. I'm not sure how it is in South Africa, but in the U.S. you kind of like can qualify for your elite license and stuff. And I did after college. So I raced elite for a couple of years, and it just, I mean, I was also, you know, you're fresh out of college, you're trying to start, you're like working full time and you're trying to race a lot. And it was just too much. And so I kind of got a little burned out. I think I was also burned out of all the like you're saying, the triathlete type A gear. And so I just kind of stepped back. I just did some other stuff, was like, I don't really want to do this anymore. And then a couple of years ago, I decided to come back. And it's been a lot more fun this time around, a lot less like obsessing about, you know, the stuff I don't care about. So.
What's been different this time around?
I would say like at my attitude, it's kind of just, I'm going to, you know, have fun and that's great. But also, this time around, the other half of the attitude is I got like a coach and I kind of, she tells me what to do and I do it and, you know, and put training first. Like once you're like, I'm going to do whatever is on my training plan, you kind of just do it and then you get faster because that's how it works. As opposed to, you know, second guessing yourself all the time and being like, should I do this workout? Should I not do this workout? I don't know. And then you skip things and then you're like, why aren't I getting faster? And it's a whole cycle of self-defeat, right?
Have you always been in into the longest sort of endurance stuff, or has it been a progression?
No. I used to be an 800 meter runner. That was what I was going to do in college too. So sprint triathlons, which is what we raced in college, seemed, that's an hour. An hour is actually like a pretty long time to race, right? If you're used to like 2 minutes. So it actually took me a long time to kind of have the endurance, the base. When I first tried to do halves, they seemed so long. Oh my God. So,
what do you prefer now? Do you prefer the longer stuff or do you prefer the shorter stuff?
That's an interesting question. I've been like joking that I really wish fulls were not my thing because they're so unpleasant and it's so terrible. But I think they might be my thing. I think I actually am better at them. I've been doing a bunch of halves this year and I like those. I really, that would be great. That would like, if I could just get a little bit faster, that would be awesome. So that would be great.
Do you think the full gives you a bit of a bigger margin of error? I mean, you talk about if you can get faster, but the full, it does allow you to sort of have one or two, I say weaknesses, but you can get away a bit more if you do have something where you're a bit weaker at.
I think the other thing is that there's room for mistakes. Like somebody told me a story about a guy who got to his bike, realized he didn't have his DI2 charger, went back to his hotel, got it, came back and still got fourth on the day. So like there's room for, so whenever something's going wrong, you can always just be like, that's fine. It's a long day. 2 minutes doesn't matter, which I think is like a really big psychological weight that like it's lifted off your shoulders. So.
Talk to me about the psychological sort of the decision-making process of when you decided through your first full Ironman, because I mean, running a marathon for most people is crazy, but try and do that at the back of a long swim and a long bike. It's just psychotic. Tell me your thought and your thinking process before your first full.
So I was going to do this grad school fellowship in 2014. And I had this like idea. I was like, I'm going to do an Ironman before I start this grad school fellowship. And I was also like 28 or 29. So I was like, it's going to be before I turn 30. And maybe I'm going to turn out to be really good. It was a terrible idea because I literally flew from the Ironman to grad school and like moved to a new city. And it was awful. So that was kind of I was like, I'm going to do this before. And I thought I was going to do just one, be done, check that box. But then after I finished the grad school fellowship, I didn't have a job lined up, and I was like, oh, I have 3 months to train. I'm going to see how. So that was when I actually got really serious about it. So I was like, I'm going to do whatever I'm told by my coach for these 3 months, see how it goes. And I did Ironman Wisconsin that fall. And that was actually kind of when I got like serious, so to speak. So.
And results wise, I mean, have you always been pretty good at this?
I've been like, okay. I've been like, you know, decent at running and swimming and biking took a little while. Whoa, shit. My cat just jumped up on the balcony and is about to fall off our porch. sorry. But it's only really been in the last couple, like 2.5 years that I really kind of upped my training game. And that's really made a big difference for me. That was like a huge jump in terms of results and performance and all that.
So. Was it just a case of selling out? Is it as simple as that, or is there a lot more to it?
Well, for me, I joke that it's like, oh, it actually turns out training works. Like, I literally started training a lot more. Basically, that summer that I had no job lined up after grad school, and I spent 3 months, and I kept calling it like my pilot project. Like, we're going to see if this works. Like, what if you actually train really, really hard for 3 months? And I literally dropped an hour off my Ironman time. So I was like, well, turns out it works. And so then from there, I kind of, you know, like, okay, now let's do it for a whole year and see if I can sustain this and kind of go from there.
Because you've raced as both. You've raced age grouper and in the sort of pro ranks. The decision to make that switch?
Right. So I'm racing pro this year. It's kind of like my first year because I did Kona. I qualified at that Ironman in 2015, and then I raced Kona a year later this past year. And so this year, 2017, was kind of my pro year. For me, I knew it was coming. Like, after I had that like pilot project, let's see if I can train hard for 3 months. Then it was like, okay, let's see if I can do this for a whole season, a whole year, 2016. And if I can, and if I continue to improve, then at the end of the year after Kona, I'm going to upgrade. Like, I knew that that was like the plan, you know, assuming everything continued to go well, partially because I just think that like, if you keep winning the overall amateur, and you got to move up, like you can't keep sandbagging. I believe that fundamentally. I think it's like kind of, you gotta move up. It would have been nice to like get a bowl at Kona before I did that, but I did it. I was like 10th instead, and that's fine. So maybe that'll be a goal to go back when I'm like 60 and get a bowl. So
that's my strategy to get there, is to outlive yes. to outlive everyone in my age group.
Yes.
Kelly, as far as the sort of difference between racing as an age group and racing as a pro, what's been the biggest change for you?
Strategy. It's opposed to being or kind of a static race. I mean, it's still a static race. My husband makes fun because he used to race cycling, and that's very, very not a static race. But as opposed to age group, where you're like, I'm just going to do these are my watts, this is my pace, I'm going to do it. There's a lot more responding to people and trying to go with people. Partially because it is a smaller field. It's like 15 people, and you know all of them, and you know which ones you probably can beat and which ones you probably can't, and you can, you know, react. That also has negative consequences. Like, I've done, you sometimes you go with somebody that you're like, oh, that was a bad idea, and you blow up and it's a disaster. So that's been like a really big difference. That and the there's just not as many people out. A lot of times you're by yourself. You're by yourself like the whole day, or you're by yourself with, you see two other girls though, like the whole day. And that's kind of it.
As far as Kona as an age group, I mean, when did Kona first come onto the radar for you? Was it always in the back of your mind that that was something you wanted to do?
Sure. I mean, like, obviously everybody wants to do it, but when I did Ironman Wisconsin in 2015, which was where I qualified, my actual goal was just I wanted to have a kick-ass race. As like I said, like, that was my goal, and so I had like general time goals. But I mostly just knew I wanted to just like, I hadn't been happy with my one the year before, which was my first and only. And so I just wanted to be like, I know I can do better. Turns out, like, when you focus on that and the process and like that, like, then Kona came and I qualified. But I don't know that it was like, I don't know, for me at least, obsessing about qualifying and going out and trying to like, I don't know that that would have worked for me, because I just would have become too much in my head, if that makes sense.
It does. Do you think that's an individual thing, or do you think that's probably the better way to do it, to plan the race and race it the way you want to race it. And if that's good enough on the day to get you a slot, then cool. And if it's not good enough on the day, then so be it. You come back and fight another day. Or do you think you need to go out? And I think that's probably one of the big differences between racing pro and racing as an age grouper. Whereas racing as a pro, you just got to go and it's about winning on the day. It's not necessarily about chasing a time, in my mind. Do you think it's better to chase the what you've worked for as opposed to going out and chasing a slot and risking blowing up?
It's hard to say what's better, right? Because everybody has their own way they race. I think it's harder when you have goals that are like, I want to be like second, and maybe, you know, a slot will roll down if I'm third, because you have no control over that. And so that's one of the things that they always tell you when you set goals, right? Like, that's one of the principles of, there's like four principles of goal setting. And one of them is the goals you can control, and you have no control over who else shows up, whether they take the slot, whether they already have a slot, like what they do. The only thing you can control is what you do, right? And so that's why you're supposed to have like flexible goals, like ranges, you know, like if everything goes right, this is what, like, so yes, you definitely, I think that that's how you have to go into something, is like, best case scenario, I win this, whatever. Worst case scenario, you know, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to respond on the day, and I'm not going to be like super, because I think a lot of people, when they're like, oh, I have to get a Kona slot, when they get passed for third or whatever on the run, they're like, well, that's it. Like, that was my goal. I'm this is terrible. And it falls apart. And then they start thinking, they're already in their head on the marathon, start planning like their next, like, well, I can go to this other one. Well, I'm going to chase this other, which works out sometimes. But I think a lot of times you have to just stay focused on what you can control and your goal on the day.
Did you know that one that you qualified at, that if you qualify, you were going, was that like, you're going to hit the time? If it's good enough to qualify, you were going to book your slot? Or was it a case of get to sort of the awards and it's like, hey, I've managed to grab myself a slot?
So it was one of the races, they didn't have a pro field back then, like they do now, whatever. And so I was in second woman overall, so I knew, you know what I mean? Like, I knew I was in, because I had like a lead bike and like people were screaming for me. And, like, you know, then that you're like, yeah, no, I'm doing pretty good. Like, I got this. So that was actually, it was more fun. Like, if I hadn't gotten it, like, it was more fun to be second overall and have a lead bike and have like, I don't know if you've ever done Ironman Wisconsin. It like runs through campus, so there's like drunk college kids like screaming for you. So it's the most fun ever. So people are just screaming for you. So that was, if it turned out I didn't get a Kona spot, but I mean, I knew because I knew. So
tell me about racing on the Big Island. I mean, it's very different to most other Ironmans. Your experience of racing there?
So I've only done it once, and actually that was the only time I've ever been. I haven't like been other times to hang out. Kind of wish I was going to hang out this year, but that's fine. It's rough. I'm like the very first time because I was actually there a couple weeks before, because I was house sitting for a family friend, and so I was just like hanging out, house sitting, working from home and training. So the very first time I did the ride from Kona out to Javi and back, I literally got to Javi and texted my husband like, oh shit, like this is gonna be really hard. So I was good to have seen that before the day, because everyone tells you it's gonna be really hard and it's really bad and it's hot and it's windy, but when you're actually out, you're like, oh crap. So yeah, it was definitely rough. It's, you know, but after a couple weeks you kind of like are like, oh, the heat, like you get used to the heat a little bit, not really, and the humidity. The thing that that blew my mind, that I'm starting to like pay more attention to now, UV index. Have you ever paid attention to the UV index? Yeah. So I'm kind of very pale, as you've noticed, and I got fried. I got like heat stroke, fried, like scarred from sunburn, and that's pretty terrible. So that's, I would say, the thing that I found really rough.
Yeah, living in South Africa, and I know a lot of our Australian listeners, it's something that they have to bear in mind. And that's, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I think a lot of people don't realize stuff like that. I mean, it's things that you have to, I mean, it's important. You can't go into one of these things and realize it on the day. I mean, it can ruin your race.
Oh, yeah. No, it was, and people are like, oh, did you wear sunscreen? Yeah, I wore sunscreen. Like, it was still really bad. So
yeah, I've got a tri-suit tattooed on my back because of it. So it is definitely something that that you need to be cognizant of. And performance wise, do you feel? And I know you would like love to go back, but do you feel that you've got unfinished business on the island, or if you never go back, you're satisfied with what you've done there?
For me personally, I mean, I got heat stroke and I started like projectile vomiting. So, I mean, it was fine. Like, I had a day. That happens to everyone. You feel like, all right, I did this. I definitely would obviously like to have a better race, but that's not Kona. The conditions are not me. They're not my thing. Mm-hmm. If you were going to create a race that was like not the opposite of what I'd be good at, it'd be Kona. So it's not like high on my list. It would be, like I told my coach, I was like, before I go back, I want to get like 30 or 40 minutes faster. I want to be like a sub 10 person solidly at the island before I go back. Cause you want to actually like be in the mix. I don't want to just like go out there. And I mean, for me, that would be like the next step.
Yeah, particularly second time around. I mean, first time around, a lot of people say it's, you know, we're going to go and experience it. It's the world champs. Right. We're going to soak it all in. But to go back, it's not a cheap trip. It doesn't matter where you come from. It's expensive to get there, and it's expensive to be there. And second time round, you don't want to make up the numbers again. You want to go out there and be competitive.
Right, exactly. And racing pro now, obviously, like the odds, it's a lot harder to qualify, particularly for the women. So it's just, you know, it's a different ball game. So if I managed to qualify and go back, like I need to be in it. So
got to make it count. Gilly, tell me about. Right. As an athlete right now, what are you working on? What are you struggling with right now?
Like emotionally, personally, at the end of the season.
Everything.
I'm so done. I'm so done with the season. I'm doing Ironman Louisville in 2 weeks, and it's been a long year, you know. It's been again, partially that's like being your first pro year, like doing a lot of races. And I'm ready to be done. You know, you hit that point, you're like ready for the off season. Ready to drink all the beer and be done. So
tell me, I mean, you took that break and a bit of it was burnout and feeling like you're feeling now. How do you keep yourself fresh in the sport? And how important is it to keep yourself fresh in the sport?
Yes, I definitely take a pretty hard, like at least 3 weeks, probably around 3 weeks. We're like a week of like kind of nothing. And then like a couple weeks of just whatever, you know, whatever pops into your head. Like if you want to go commute biking, if you want to try yoga, whatever. Because I think that's kind of important. It's definitely something that I kind of struggle with. I think a lot of the pros, like that's not generally, like, you know, there's a whole like joke, right? Like you have to hold them back, not push them forward. They don't generally struggle with that as much. It's just like a personality, mental thing. For me, it's definitely a challenge just because I do find it hard to like stay that focused for that long. I just find it hard. So I think it is important to kind of take some off time.
And hang out on the dark side of it. Is it? Do you need to hang out on the dark side?
Yes.
I'm built for hanging out on the dark side. That's why I do triathlon. I love that. As far as what you still want to achieve in the sport, what are you chasing? What are some of the goals?
I feel like I want to win an Ironman. That'd be hard. There's some more steps. This year has kind of been about like just kind of, you know, incremental improvement and all that, which is totally fine, totally good. Obviously that gets a little hard to like keep thinking about long-term goals. I mean, I would like to be on like Ironman, like podium. That would be great. And like requalifying for Kona as a pro would be awesome. I think I'm pretty far from that right this second. So those are kind of the long goals. Then on a bit by bit level, you kind of have to pick and choose each, you know, what races, what do you expect, what do you think you can do, that kind of thing.
We've got quite a few sort of really good age groupers that listen to this podcast. And I think when you get to that point as an age grouper, the thought crosses everyone's mind. I wonder if I could do this for a living, if I could turn pro. What's been the biggest sort of surprises for you this year? Now that your first pro season's done, what's been the toughest? What's been the coolest? What's been some of the lessons you've learned?
I mean, the hardest part is the strategy and how it changes. It just changes the race. I mean, because you'll hear a lot of times, you know, the top, like, because obviously I was a top age grouper and a lot of my friends still are. And you hear a lot of them be like, oh, well, I would have beat like three of the pros. And you're like, man, it was a totally different race. Like, that might be true, but you have no idea, honestly, till you're, like, doing it.
Did you know, was that a surprise for you? And you're not the first person I've heard say that. Was that really a surprise? I mean, because you're right. Age groupers say, oh, it can't be that bad. But once you're in it, it's very different.
On a, like, rational level, it wasn't a surprise. I 100% knew that. Everybody told me that. Actually being out there, like, my first race this year was Oceanside. It was still just like, oh, man, it was a mess. Like, you don't really, you know, it's one of those things where you don't know it till you know it. And that's true. I mean, that's what everybody says, is you don't know it till you know it. And it's kind of true. The other thing that's been interesting, I mean, it's been also on the other end, like, everybody is really friendly. Everybody knows each other. You do kind of get to know everybody. You see everybody at the same races. It's not like that big a community, right? There's only like a couple hundred. So, I mean, and then within like North America, there's really only like a couple dozen. So, you know, everyone, which has been really nice and cool. So,
as far as biggest lessons learned this year, what would you say is your biggest lesson that you've learned?
The balance between like the strategy and responding to people and also still racing my own race has been definitely what I've been working on. Cause there is, you know, you do have to respond to things, but there is also, you know, if I responded to like I made the mistake of, I was on like Lauren Brandon's feet at the swim at one point. I was like, that's a bad idea. Like, that's, what am I doing? So there is kind of that balance. That's been the biggest lesson.
And as far as life and training balance from an age grouper to pro, I mean, obviously I mean, I don't know how much more you're training as a pro than you were as an age grouper. And have you, how difficult has it been to make that transition in training?
I mean, I think a lot of the top age groupers are already training like pro levels. Let's be real. Like, a lot of the top age groupers at Kona, like, are basically semi-pros, right? Like, they have flexible jobs. They would train like 30 hours a week. So it wasn't like a big, big shift really. Cause I also have like I work freelance contract. So, you know, it is already flexible. Sometimes they're really busy and sometimes aren't. And I think that's pretty normal. Obviously then there's like another jump that may happen in the next like year or two, but you couldn't just go from nothing to, you know what I mean? Like, you can't just jump. You have to like progress slowly. Otherwise you end up hurt or injured. I think a lot of people do that though. Their first year pro, they're like, I need to train more, and then they end up injured.
How easy is it where you are now to overthink things? That it's because you don't have a full-time job that you're going to Monday through Friday, you almost, this is all you're doing. So you almost get deep inside your own head and almost get analysis or paralysis by analysis. Is that something you struggled with, sort of just really getting in your own head?
So I work full-time, but I've been freelance for like 6 years. Like, I've that's always been my job. Not even way before all that. Like, even when I was on like my triathlon break, I was a freelancer, which is a whole different lifestyle, and none of them do any sports because it's actually a very unhealthy lifestyle because they all like work crazy hours. So anyway, so it's like a completely different thing, but that's what I've always done. So it actually isn't really a big change for me. But it is a hard balance because like it is crazy. Like, I work in newsrooms sometimes, and so it is like a crazy, you know, like around the election we were working just like crazy hours or whatever, but then you're like, but I want to, so you have to kind of plan ahead. Like, I know the 4 weeks before an Ironman I shouldn't take on a bunch of assignments, right? Like, I know that now, and so you have to kind of, it's a lot of planning for me. It's a lot of planning and plotting out what makes sense.
And that's not just for you. I think that's something that most age groups particularly struggle with is that balance of planning and getting everything in place, work, life, family, training and racing. It's that's the struggle, I think. And it's the guys and girls who can handle that and do that well tend to be the successful ones.
Oh, yeah. One of my friends is doing her first triathlon, and she was telling me, she's a colleague at work the other day, she was like, it's so much planning. Like, because she did marathon. She's like, but you have to like plan when you're going to go to the pool and then have your bike ready and then bring your running gear with you. And I was like, I know. Like, that's how it goes. So.
That's the work. Let's talk about first timers. We've got a lot of first timers that listen to this podcast as well. What advice would you give to someone who's planning their first Ironman or just getting into the sport and trying to find their way in the sport?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, so I talk to a lot of people just getting into it, but a lot of people I talk to already, you know, they already run. A lot of times they already do half marathons and stuff because that seems to be the common path. So I tell a lot of them, like, you know, don't overthink this. Like, you already know how to train. You already know, especially if they already know how to, like, they already have a bike, they already know how to swim. then it's like, just do it. Like, especially with women, I hear a lot of my friends who are new, like, I'm going to be last. I'm going to suck. I'm not going to be good. And I'm like, you are like, I have lifeguarded these things. You are not going to be last. just do it. Like, just do it. And you'll learn as you go. And I think that's the biggest, you will learn as you go. It will be a mess the first time, but then like, you also have no expectations. So you will exceed expectations, and then you kind of go from there.
And the community, I mean, you talk about it being a small community. It's pretty tight-knit, and it might be difficult to get into, but all you need to do is ask. I mean, in my experience, mm-hmm. every triathlete that I've met is more than willing to help someone out if they're not quite sure, particularly at races, transition, where do you come in, where's bike out, whatever. I mean, people are really friendly. It's a case of just opening your mouth and asking for help.
Oh, yeah, no, especially... I mean, I don't know how to, but we, like, there are a lot of groups, there are a lot of clubs. So if you were really, really like, I don't know what to do, you just join the Golden Gate Triathlon Club or whatever. And there's a lot of people. So,
yeah, amazing, amazing bunch. As far as sort of your proudest achievement in the sport so far, what are you most proud of?
Well, that first Ironman I did when I kind of like, got serious, was very cool. Like it was very, I was very happy with that. Second at Ironman Wisconsin because I had told myself I'm giving myself 3 months. We'll see how this goes. I'm going to do like everything I can to make this a success and we'll see how it goes. And so that really was proof of concept. You know what I'm saying? So it felt like, oh, I worked really hard and this is what happened. The other one for me was I did Wildflower. You know Wildflower? It's famous, yep. The triathlon. Okay. So when it was still around last year, I won the amateur race, which was very, very cool. But it was also, it was like 2 weeks after probably like one of the worst races I've ever had. So I was pretty happy about like, I mean, I was a mess after like terrible race. I was like, oh my God, you suck. You're awful. Ironman Wisconsin was a fluke. You're not very good. You might as well quit, right? Like it was bad. And I rebounded and I came back. And so I was pretty happy about that too. So I would say those two things, like, you know, it's the proof of concept and the like that you can do this. It's nice.
The sport's a great leveler, isn't it? Just when you think you're good, right. It throws you one that goes, you know what? You're not as good as you think you are. Sit down.
You're not as good as you think you are, yeah.
So. As far as the mental side of it and the self-talk, how big a role is that in what you do and managing that and sort of managing your own expectations and building yourself up with those expectations? How is that something you battle with? Is it something you work hard on?
Yeah, I think like the mental talk of what you are thinking during a race, especially during Ironman, because it's so long, it's so much time with just you and yourself, is really, really important. I think a lot of people kind of downplay that or they don't practice it. They think like, oh, I'll just be tough when it happens. Like when it happens, I'll just do it. And I have found the only way to be good at it on the day is to practice it, right? To have a lot of really hard workouts where you figure out how to get through them. And when you figure out how to get through them, you develop tricks, you develop mind games, you like, whatever, you play games. You're like, oh, I just need to get through this minute. Then I just need to get through this next minute. And that's, I mean, that's what everyone does. And you talk to them, even the best people, they're like, I just thought aid station to aid station. I just thought about what I was going to drink at the next aid station for the whole time between aid stations. Like that's literally what everyone does, but you have to learn it. You have to practice it and practice it and practice it. So that's been like, it's been a lot of practice, but you kind of just, you just go with it. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes, you know, you start thinking, this is terrible. Why am I doing this? I'm a smart person. I could get a real job. I could do something else, right? Like you start thinking all that stuff.
And as you said, your first one is a one and done, and you've done how many now since then?
This is going to be my fifth, like next week. So.
And how many more do you think you've still got in you? I mean, what's the plan? I mean, are you going to be racing these things till you're 80?
Maybe. There's definitely, you know, a few more, definitely like however many more years of pro, like 5, 7, 10, something like that. Probably a couple a year, you know, a few a year. I have a friend who did 6 this year. That seems like a lot. So I may not do 6 in 1 year, but a couple. And then I do see myself probably taking a break and then coming back when I'm like 50 or 60. Because those people seem like, man, have you ever been, you've been to Kona, right? The 80-year-old who finished at like right at midnight last year, Man, he's a superstar. You're like, I want to be that guy. That sounds awesome.
Well, Killy, my dad did his first Ironman at 67. So, I mean, it's incredible. It's inspiring to see that. And I mean, I always just joke, gee, I hope I'm alive at 67. But, I mean, an 80 and doing Ironmans is just phenomenal. I think it's incredible.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. It's crazy. So that would be fun. That would be really fun.
Super, super inspiring. Well, Killy, I look forward to chatting about your swim, bike, and run, the individual disciplines, and a bit about your nutrition. But we'll save that for another time. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
Sure.
And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Awesome to have you along. And thank you so much for listening and downloading to this podcast. I absolutely love putting these things together, and I've been getting some incredible tweets and Facebook messages. If you haven't touched base with us on social media, you can either just search for The Kona Edge, or you can look out for me personally. I'm pretty much across all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can find me at Big Brad Brown, though that's my handle across all of them. So, yeah, come and say hi, and let me know what you're up to. Don't forget to tweet us or Instagram us as well if you're training and listening to the podcast. I love seeing where everybody listens to the podcast from, so don't forget to tag us in those pictures as well. A huge thank you once again to our sponsor of this edition, brought to you by jackrabbit.com. If you'd like to win yourself a pair of Hoka One One running shoes, all you need to do is head over to this URL. It is jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge. You can get in the draw there, or simply text the word jackrabbit to 44222, and I will get you in the draw. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of The Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.